final week. Time has just flown by here in our Born Rich teleseminar, and it has been an incredible time. I know for some folks from the emails that I've gotten from you, there's been some people that have had some real major breakthroughs. And so I know there'll be some people tonight that are going to hear what they need to hear. And as always, we're extremely grateful, extremely happy to have Bob with us. And so for our fourth and final week, Dr. Proctor, give it to him.
Well, thanks very much, Vic. You know, I would like you to turn over to page 41 in your action planner. You've got that with you. I hope you have it with you. And what we're talking about here is the law of vibration and attraction. You know, if we can really gain an understanding of this idea of vibration and attraction, we're going to come to the conclusion that everything that happens in our life, we've attracted. Now, you know, that's a big idea for some people to grasp. In fact, it's a big idea for all people to grasp, I would imagine. Because we see things, terrible things, and we say, why did this happen? Why did they attract that? We see good things, why did they attract that? Well, if you separate those kind of questions and just deal with the straight laws of the universe, you have to arrive at the conclusion that everything vibrates, nothing rests. And if we look on page 41, we point out the law of vibration explains the difference between mind and matter, between the physical and the non-physical. Under the law of vibration, we find that everything vibrates, nothing rests. Everything is in a constant state of motion. And that includes a body laying in a coffin. We say the person is dead. Well, the soul has left the body, but that body is not dead. I can assure you, if you got a proper microscope, pick up the remains and look at it, you would see it moving right before your eyes. It would be little particles of energy. They'd be dancing. And if they weren't moving, how would they ever change to dust? You see, these are some of the things you want to think about. I'm sitting at a desk right now. It's a beautiful oak desk. Now, the wood seems hard and solid and polished and shiny. And it's wood. And we call it wood because of the speed it's vibrating at. It's really energy. In front of me is a glass of water. Glass is energy. Water's energy, so we've got energy holding energy here, and it's sitting on energy. Now, the glass used to be sand. You could say the water was air or ether. Well, everything is air and ether at one time, and it moves into form. So everything that we see, the walls in the room we're sitting in, the chair that we're sitting on, my voice that you're hearing right now is a vibration. And everything in this universe vibrates. Now, here's the beautiful part of this. You have a brain. You're not a brain. You have a brain. And the brain is an electronic switching station. And by activating brain cells, you alter the vibration you're in. Every brain cell has a positive and a negative pole. The law of polarity decrees that everything has an opposite, like there's no inside to the room I'm in if there isn't an outside. And there'd have to be an outside if there is an inside, and vice versa. There's no right side without left. There's no front without back. And you couldn't have a positive without a negative. It's the opposite side of the same thing, or the flip side of a coin. Every cell in your brain has a positive and a negative pole. Now, when you build images in your mind and you impregnate them then into cells in your brain, when you think about whatever that is, the image, you will activate either the positive or the negative pole in the cells that those pictures are plugged into. Like, when I ask you to think of your home, think of your home. Now, the home is an image that it's impregnated into cells in your brain. As I said, think of your home. We activated certain cells. You heard what I was saying. It sent a light message down a nerve passageway, struck a group of cells in your brain. They increased in amplitude of vibration, and the picture of the home come on the screen of your mind. Now, you're either going to build a good picture or a bad picture. It's going to be straight neutral. is not going to be good or bad. And as you start to think about your home, you're going to think about what's good about it, what's bad about it, what you like, what you don't like, and so on. By just flipping pictures or you know, cells, pictures come on the screen of our mind. Now, when we're talking to other people, what we're really doing is sending out vibrations. Our voice is a vibration. Our thoughts are vibration, the most potent that there is. And they hear, they see, you gesture, and you're sending messages to their brain. And you activate brain cells and cause pictures to come on the screen of the mind. Now, if a person's speaking a foreign language to you, you don't get the picture because you have no cells that resonate with what they're saying. If I say chair, you have an image come on the screen of your mind. It could be a swivel chair, it could be a kitchen chair, a high chair. But if I went to Russia and I said chair to someone that only speaks Russian, they wouldn't get a picture. I don't know what chair is in Russian, but if they said, you know, chair to me in Russian, I wouldn't get a picture. Well, we have the ability by thinking to activate certain cells in our brain, and we can move ourselves into a positive or a negative vibration. Now, if you're in a negative vibration, conscious awareness of that, you would say, I don't feel good. You wouldn't say, I'm consciously aware of being in a negative vibration. You'd say, I don't feel good. If you're in a positive vibration, you'd say, you feel good. So, do you see, you have the ability, just through thinking, to alter the vibration you're in. You can move yourself into a positive or a negative vibration. And you see, the truth is, we do both. There's sometimes we move ourselves into a positive vibration, sometimes into a negative vibration. Now, we don't seem to understand that we're doing that to ourselves. We point to other people or things or conditions or circumstance. We say, well, she really upset me. He made me so damn angry. Oh, I saw this accident. It made me sick. Well, the accident didn't make you sick. She didn't make you angry. He didn't make you angry. We do it to ourselves. We do it by choosing to let images come into our mind that cause us to move into positive or negative vibrations. Now, let's suppose we want something that we haven't got. It could be business, it could be money, it could be people. How do we start to get it? Well, we start to get it by putting ourselves into a vibration that's in harmony with the good that we want. And by putting ourselves into that vibration, not only do we move in the right direction, but we attract it to us. If you were to listen to Earl Nightingale's Lead the Field program, there's a point in there where he said, you move towards the goal, and the goal moves towards you. And that's exactly what happens. See, when we understand the law of vibration, we can put ourselves into a vibration that's going to attract to us the good that we desire. Now, that could be a person. It could be a condition or circumstance. It could be money. It could be business. It could be whatever you want. Whatever you want. That's why we say you become what you think about. Because your thoughts control your vibration. The vibration dictates what you attract to you. Now, if you look on page 42, we talk about positive and negative personalities. We quote John Milton here. He said, the mind in itself and in its own place can make a hell out of heaven or a heaven out of hell. People, as a rule, can be classified as either positive personalities or negative personalities. And, you know, you're going to find that negative people attract negative people to them. That's the only thing they can attract to them. They attract to them whatever is in harmony with them. So if you find fault with a lot of the people that you chum around with, understand this, you've attracted them and they've attracted you. You know, it's just the way it is. You'll see some people that are in sales. I was talking to a gentleman today, Ron Kubek. He's from Victoria, way out on the west coast in Canada. And quite an excellent real estate person. Well, you're going to find some real estate people attract all kinds of listings, attract all kinds of deals, and there's others that couldn't get one if their life depended on it. Why is that? Why is it that some people just attract what they need and others repel it? They're not repelling what they need. They're actually attracting what they need. Now think. We don't attract what we want. We attract what we are. James Allen pointed that out in the little book, As a Man Thinketh. You need, or your needs are being delivered to you. Now, you could want something, but that's not what you need. The wants are of a conscious level. They're in the conscious mind. And the need is determined by the image that you're emotionally involved in. And that is what you're going to attract into your life. Now, you connect with it. We talk about the connecting link. Well, there is a connecting link. You see, if nothing's created or destroyed, everything's already here in one form or another. So what we have to do is get in harmony with it. As we get in harmony with the good that we desire, it starts to come to us. Think of this for a moment. You get a new automobile. Let's suppose you get a nice new blue Mercedes-Benz, or you get a light green Pontiac. If you have a light green Pontiac, everywhere you go, you see light green Pontiacs. If you've got a nice deep blue Mercedes-Benz, everywhere you go, you see Mercedes-Benz. Now, if you've got the Pontiac, you probably don't notice the Mercedes. And if you've got the Mercedes, you probably don't notice the Pontiacs. See? They're out there, but we're not in harmony with them. When we get in harmony with them, we literally connect with them. Now, do you know that some people are connected to money, and some are connected to poverty? Some are connected to business, and some are not. So we start to look at this and we say, well, this law of vibration and attraction should probably really be studied, yeah, for the rest of your life. This is not something that you can treat lightly. Over on page 44, we say everything is an expression of the same thing. Everything in the entire universe is connected through the law of vibration, just as the colors in a rainbow. Now think, the colors in the rainbow are all joined together. Well, energy vibrates. It vibrates on frequencies or levels of vibration. Every level of vibration is hooked up to the one above and the one below. What we want to do is start to understand how the mind functions and then see how we connect ourselves to the good that we desire. Right? Now, you've got all levels of vibration locked up in your own personality. You really do. In the mind and the body. The mind is movement, and body is the manifestation of that movement. Now, on page 45, we say the human body is the most efficient electrical instrument in the entire universe. The human brain is probably the most efficient electrical instrument ever evolved. Both are marvels. The brain is that part of your body where all manner of frequencies are transformed from one frequency to another. In the brain, sensations are transformed into muscular action. Sound, heat, light, and thought are also, each in their turn, transformed into other frequencies, each affecting the body. Within the brain are centers which control and regulate the functioning of all the organs and parts of the body. By proper stimulation of these centers, the functioning of the organs may be controlled. If there's something wrong with a part of your body, through thought you can actually alter it. Now, I know a lot of people laugh at it, say they can't. What do you think prayer is? You've heard of prayer circles. Prayer is nothing but thought. Prayer is the movement that takes place between spirit and form with and through us. We tap into pure and adulterated spirit, which is omnipresent, and we build an image in our mind of perfect health. And we get emotionally involved in that, and what happens? That image controls the vibration of the body. Now, if you hold an image of perfect health, if there's any disease in the body, it'll be cast off because it won't be in harmony with the image of perfect health. And you're going to find as you regenerate and rejuvenate and build new cells in the body, they will become healthy cells. You see, you don't turn disease into health. You release the disease and create the health. And you say, well, why doesn't everybody do this, get sick? Because we focus on what we don't want. We let the lower side of our life control the higher side of our life. We don't understand the laws. We don't understand vibration. We don't understand attraction. We don't understand polarity. Why? Well, we don't study it enough. You know? Like, there's all kinds of people who have the opportunity to be on this line tonight that haven't got the foggiest idea of what I'm talking about. But if they listened to me for a while, they would say, I think this guy's got a point. And then they would start to study it. That's what happened to me. And I have never stopped. Turn over to page 46, Vibrations and Goals. Numerous times in seminars, it's been suggested that everything you are seeking is seeking you. We've heard that. You've heard it. I've heard it. It's suggested that you already have everything you want. You don't get anything. It's simply a matter of becoming aware of what you already have. It is within. Now, if energy is neither created nor destroyed, everything you will ever want is already here. It is a simple matter of choosing the thoughts that will put you into harmonious vibration with the good that you desire. And the moment you bring your life into harmony with the law, the negative will have taken wings, for the cause will have been removed. Now, the secret to receiving on the physical plane the results you desire is covered more adequately in another lesson on expectation, which we touched on a week ago. All right? So as you get in and you start to study this, you'll say, this makes a lot of sense. It really does. Now, I want you to take a look at what's coming into your life now. What's coming into your life? What kind of people are you attracting into your life? Do you attract happy, joyous people, or do you attract sad people? Because it's whatever you attract, it's what you're thinking of. And whatever you're thinking of, that's what you attract. You see, if you want to improve your business, you have to see in your mind the business coming to you. Literally, coming to you. It will come and knock on your door. I'll give you a real good example. I was putting together a proposal. In fact, I'm still putting it together. I was getting on a plane on Sunday night to fly to Kuala Lumpur to go in and make a presentation to the president of the second largest mutual fund company over there. And we phoned to set up the appointment, and he's leaving today to come here. So I don't have to go to Kuala Lumpur, I just have to go to Minneapolis, because he's going to be over in Philly and then over in Minneapolis. You say, this is wild. You start thinking about something and things happen. You'll say, well, that's just a coincidence. That would have happened anyway. Maybe it was. Maybe it wouldn't have. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about when you hold the proper image, things just seem to fall into place for you. And what we want to do is gain an understanding of this. You see, you know, it's been mentioned many times, it's in almost every good book, that the secret is not in working harder. The secret is in not working as hard. Now, I quote Napoleon Hill all the time. I think you know that if you know me. And I'm forever talking about the fact that, you know, he said, we don't work harder. You shouldn't work hard at all if you want to earn a lot of money. He said, those people who believe that hard work and honesty alone will bring riches, it's not true. He said, perish the thought. It just is not true. He says, riches come in response to definite demands and not by chance or luck. Well, you're going to find some people that will do 25 times as much business as another person. You're going to find one person will sell more in a week than another person sell in a year. How does that happen? You know, how is it that some people seem to play a lot of golf and go out sailing and fool around, and yet their business is flying? One's attracting what they want, and the other's attracting what they don't want. You're going to attract whatever you focus on. And if you're focused on what you don't want, I can assure you, you're going to attract it to you. So this lesson on vibration and attraction is probably one of the most important that you're ever going to study. Now, you get into the next lesson. We're into the risk takers. And if you look over on page 49, it just doesn't lend itself to go through this concept on the phone. But we go through stages. We go from bondage to reason to the terror barrier to freedom. If you've got the book in front of you, just want to draw a line between the terror barrier and freedom and understand there's a great big wall there, and that's what we refer to as the terror barrier. Now, let's take it one step at a time. You live in bondage when nothing happens very positive. You keep getting the same results over and over and over and over again, and they're results that you do not want. And then somebody comes along, and they drop a beautiful idea in your mind and sort of get you excited. Now, this is the next stage here on page 49, where we're talking about reason. And reason is where you start to think about it, and you start to give conscious thought to the concept that, well, maybe I could do better than I'm doing. Maybe it's not necessary for me to continually, you know, do what I don't want to do for the rest of my life. And it's a matter of reason. Now, you can think about it, but you've got to step out and act on it. And that's where risk-taking comes in. If you're not prepared to take a risk, you don't even deserve the reward. You've got to think about that for a while. Well, you go from reason to the terror barrier. Now, this is when you've got this beautiful idea in your mind, and you're impressing it upon your subconscious mind, and your old paradigm's trying to get rid of it. I often point out that if your goal doesn't scare and excite you, it probably isn't much good. Well, it excites you because it's what you want. It scares you because you've never done it before. And as you go to get into emotionally involved with the idea of what you have never done before, that's what causes fear. You see, it's actually the opposing ideas in your subconscious mind that cause this conflict. It's the old paradigm trying to be mixed with the great big new idea. The paradigm is work at a job, get a salary, do whatever they tell you, don't make a wave, and stay there until you get the gold watch or whatever they give you after 40-some years of doing what somebody else says, working when they tell you to work, earning what they tell you you can earn. You see, it's not really a very good idea, but that's the way most people do it. Well, every now and then, someone that's living in bondage gets hit by a big idea, whether it's on a call like this or through a book or a CD or something, and it excites them, and so they say, I'm going to do this. And they go to do it, and bang, they hit the terror barrier. Now, what are they going to do? They're either going to step through that terror barrier to freedom, or they're going to run like a scared rat right back to bondage again. And they sit back there and they say, well, it isn't that bad, you know. At least I know what I'm earning. I get 2 weeks every summer. And we start to sell ourselves on staying there. Rather than stepping through the terror barrier. And that's where the courage comes in. And you step through that terror barrier to freedom. Now, when you do that, you are never going to go back. You are never going to go back. On page 50, there's a great quote there by Goethe. You know, Goethe, a German philosopher, he more or less shaped the Western world's way of thinking. Phenomenal guy. He said, are you in earnest? Like, you really want to make things happen? Well, then he says, seize this very minute what you can do or even dream you can do and begin it. Bold boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Only engage, and the mind will grow heated. Begin, and the work will be completed. Now, let's look at that again. I want you to think of what you want to do. There's something you want to do, and it scares you. You should do something that scares you every day. Are you in earnest? Do you really want to do it? Well, then he says, seize this very minute what you can do or dream you can do and begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Only engage, and the mind grows heated. Begin, and the work will be completed. Now, here's a page where we're suggesting that you make a commitment of what it is you're going to do. Now, if you go over onto page 51, here we have the same deal. Bondage, reason, and now it's awareness and enthusiasm. See, it isn't a terror barrier anymore, because now we understand, we have become aware of what it is that's causing the conflict. We do not let that stop us. We just keep going ahead. Why? Because we're aware, and because we're aware, the fear is replaced with enthusiasm, the polar opposite. And that's what enables you then to step forward into freedom. Now, on page 52, at the top of the page, I love quoting James Allen. He's just such a phenomenal writer. He said, your circumstances may be uncongenial, but they will not long remain so if you perceive an ideal and strive to reach it. Your circumstances may be uncongenial. You may not have any money. You may not have any friends. You may not have any opportunity. Nothing where you can see where it can happen. Doesn't make any difference. Doesn't matter. The circumstances may be uncongenial. They will not long remain so if you perceive an ideal and strive to reach it. That's why Alfred Adler said he was grateful to the idea that it used him. See? Don't let the circumstance stop you. Now, we talk about the razor's edge. What we're talking about here is the fine line that separates the winning from the losing. Where do we see that? Well, we see it with electronic clocks now, don't we, in the Olympics and the different sporting events. Came in second by 1/100th of a second. 1/100th of a second. How would you measure that? Well, you measure it electronically. See? Now think about this for a moment. The line that separates winning from losing is as fine as a razor's edge. And we give you all kinds of examples. There's all kinds of them as you go through this particular lesson. Now, I want to suggest you take the CD on the razor's edge or on the terror barrier and put all the rest away and just play that thing over and over and over and over again until it suddenly dawns on you, you don't have to make a big difference. You just have to make a difference. The slightest little thing. Like, I've told the story a million times. I met my wife 25 years ago in Atlanta. She was earning $24,500 a year. She was selling insurance. I got her to make a commitment to do two things different. I call these razor's edge activities. You do two things different. One, you've got to be in front of somebody before 9 a.m. Two, you've got to ask everybody you get in front of to purchase $100,000 worth of insurance. Is that it? I said, that's it. Over the coming year, she earned $495,000. You'd say, oh, come on. No, that's exactly what happened. But I'm going to tell you something else that happened. She hit the terror barrier a number of times because when she got away from me, it sounded so simple. But in 4.5 years, she had never been on an appointment before 9 a.m., and she had never sold $100,000 worth of insurance. As a matter of fact, as we started to analyze it, she wasn't selling anything. She just called on people over and over and over, and every now and then somebody'd buy. And she realized when she really started to sell, when she would ask for the order, and she would get there, razor's edge activities. It makes an enormous difference. You see, I think the hardest thing we have to get a hold of is that one small change in behavior can make such an enormous change in results. It's just, it's so obvious and yet so misunderstood. The next chapter we're talking about is don't think in reverse. Don't let the past control you. Now, we talk about resentment and guilt, two very inappropriate emotions, and they're hooked together. I mean, they're like Siamese twins because, you know, the resentment is when I've got a bad thought about you. The guilt is when I got a bad thought about me. But you want to know something? As far as I'm concerned, they're both the same because they're in me. I've got a bad thought about you, and I'm dwelling on it. I don't like you. I don't like you. Or I've got a bad thought about me. I don't like me. I don't like me. I'm putting me in a bad vibration. See, it doesn't matter how justified you are in holding a resentment against it's a waste of time. It's like guilt. It's an inappropriate emotion. Now, at the bottom of page 60, it's an absolutely beautiful affirmation to release guilt and resentment. It came from Dr. Joseph Murphy. I willingly release the thoughts and things that have cluttered my mind. I release, name the people that you've resented. You could resent your parents or your siblings and still love them. Put their names down. They could be dead. It's not the person that's causing you the problem. It's the idea you hold. I release.
Hello?
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 Bob? Jack? Bob? He went away.
Are we having one of these energy from the sun things?
I'm not sure.
What if he's talked on a cell phone or something? Maybe...
No, he was calling from home.
Oh.
He went away. Okay, well, let's hold on. He'll be back, I'm sure, when he realizes that,
Yeah, I hope he comes back because this is great stuff. Please just come back.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Okay. I had to call back in.
Did you get knocked off?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Vic, you know the material so well, maybe you'll have to continue on.
I don't know that I know the material that well, but I will tell you that a thought struck me as he was going through the law of attraction and vibration. You know, that's not something that most of us consciously have ever used, and yet we instinctively know that. And the reason I know we instinctively know it is because we'll walk away from somebody with, and we'll make the expression, I got bad vibes about him, or I got good vibes about her, or whatever. What is vibe short for, slang for vibration?
Right.
So we instinctively know the law of vibration attraction. We're you know, keyed into it as long as we take down some of the barriers and allow to you know ourselves to use it in all cases. But that was something that, as he was speaking about the law of vibration and attraction, occurred to me as something that we already use. We just don't always identify the law as such. So anyway, are you back yet, Bob?
Can you hear me, Vic?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I don't know what happened.
Well, we all got, quite a few of us got knocked off. Some of us didn't, but anyway. We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
Wonder
everybody
why
was,
we attracted
everybody
that.
Was, everybody was missing you.
Wonder why we attracted it, though.
Yeah, I understand.
Do you know what it was? It was testing our attitude. Do we react or respond?
I agree.
But at any rate, as you come down here, let's come back down to this affirmation. If we're holding any resentment or guilt, we're going to attract some real bad stuff. A lot of people, you know, I have a good friend of mine, doctor friend of mine, who's taught me so much about the mind, and he said that resentment is, arthritis and rheumatism is nothing but frozen hate. Now, people hear that. They don't want to hear it. But I have watched people that have had real problems with that, and as they get into forgiveness and releasing the resentments, their joints become lubricated and they're healthy again. See, we have to go back and we have to understand the power of the mind insofar as vibration in the body is concerned. Well, here we're saying, I willingly release the thoughts and things that clutter my mind. I release, and then write the name of the person that you've held the resentment for. I release them to their highest good, and you see them happy, healthy, and wealthy, and me to mine. That is the most powerful affirmation that you're ever going to get your hands on. And, of course, the last chapter in here is on the vacuum law of prosperity. It's creating a space for the good that you desire. I was working in Malaysia a few years ago, and I got a call from a football team in Melbourne, I think Kilda's football team. And they had me come over and work with them for a few days. And they were in a bit of a slump, and they heard that I could help them, so flew me in to work with the team. And I asked them, I said, what did you want to call? Well, of course, they wanted to win the whole deal. They wanted the trophy. You know, they wanted to win the cup. And so they took me on a tour, and I saw the trophy cabinet. Well, you couldn't have stuck a water glass in the thing. It was jam-packed. I said, where is the space? Where is the new trophy going to go? In the trophy cabinet. And I said, where? There was no room for it. And I said, you want to make a space for the good that you desire. Well, of course, they thought I was kidding, but I wasn't kidding at all. I said, you want to build a space for it. I was reading in the newspaper here just a little while ago where Mike Weir, in his trophy room in Utah, in his home, he built a cabinet with a special hanger in it for his green jacket before he even won the Masters. He created a space to hang the jacket in his trophy room. It was printed in the Toronto Daily Star here. Now, Mike Weir has to understand this concept. His junior coach is a good friend of mine, and I know he understands it, so I guess Mike understands it very well, or he wouldn't have been doing that. We've got to create a space for the good that we desire. And when we do that, our world will start to change. Vic?
Thank you, Bob. And I just got to tell you, on that particular law, I read Born Rich quite a long time before I ever met you or knew you in any way. And that was a law, Bob, that I really struggled to understand. But I, as typical of what happens when we try something and it works, I actually put it into practice. And it has been amazing in my life. Not only does it make room for the old, but it actually takes your attitude of lack totally away, because when you can start giving stuff away, it's hard to maintain an attitude of lack when you're giving stuff away. So it works in a lot of ways, and I have really turned a lot of people onto that chapter because of what you did for me and so many thousands of others, and what you've done for us. And we know we've only got you for about 18 more minutes because I know you've got another call, and we've got some housekeeping and house cleaning to do, but we're going to wait till after Bob has to leave before we do that, because we've got time for some questions. So this is our last opportunity to get to the master before he goes. So who has a first question of Bob tonight?
Bob, this is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
How are you?
Great.
I've been studying this for quite some time, and I feel like I really am constantly either listening to something or reading something and following everything that I am, you know, being instructed to, and following all the principles. And I have seen evidence of this working in my life, but it always seems to be in small little bits and pieces and not in any major way. And I can't for the life of me figure out what I'm doing wrong.
Okay, now I want you to repeat what you just said and listen to yourself. Go ahead and tell me what you just said.
I've been studying this for quite some time and doing, you know, following what I feel like I'm being taught, and seeing evidence, but it seems to not be the results that I'm really looking for.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I had the intention of working with you in your one-year program recently, and set the intention, went through all the questionnaires, really had said, you know, I am going to do this. This is, you know, I have the intention. I expect it. And did actually create a little bit extra money in my life, but it, you know, certainly wasn't what I was needed to do your program. So that's just an example of.
No, you're thinking what you don't want, though.
Mm-hmm.
You're letting something outside control your thinking. You've got to build the picture, Kathy, of what it is you want, mm-hmm. and regardless of what's going on outside, you hold the image of what you want, and you expect it. You know it's going to come to you. You've got to see yourself as a magnet,
mm-hmm.
and whatever image you hold, it's going to come. You see things coming in a little way. You've repeated it here a couple of times. I wanted this. Well, I didn't get the money, but I got some of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
see it coming in abundance to you. In the book U Square, Price Pritchett says the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. When you make a commitment, you know, in seminars, Kathy, I frequently ask, I want everyone to hold up their hand that has put a deposit on the house when you didn't know where the balance of the down payment was going to come from on closing day. All kinds of people hold up their hands. And the money's always there on closing day. It's because they can't afford to even think that they won't have it because they'll lose the deposit and possibly get hit with a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
When you make a binding commitment that you're going to do something and you don't have the resources to make it happen, you've got to see it happening. You've got to see it in your mind. This is what every great athlete does, and this is what you've got to do. You're letting your conditions, your circumstance, control what you think is happening in your life. You've got to understand, Kathy, your life happens from the inside out, not from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, that's really it.
Right.
Now, what you're explaining, it's like you're telling me what your life looks like, and what it really is a reflection of what you're seeing in your mind.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you've got to change the image in your mind and hold the image until it starts to reflect in your outside world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So keep studying and keep...
You don't stop studying.
Right. Exactly. That's my intention.
Were you in the program?
No, I wanted to be in your November 5th program. That was
in it. Don't think of why you can't. Think of how you can. Give Mark Lowe a call.
Yeah, I've talked to him a few times.
We'll talk to him again. Mm-hmm. Just make a binding commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to yourself
to
have what you want.
Absolutely.
Life is too short to compromise. Anybody else got a question?
Yeah, Bob. Ron from Wisconsin.
Yes, Ron.
Actually, it's funny. The question ties in great what you were talking to Kathy about. You know, you create that image, but sometimes it seems like it's real easy to fall back into focusing on your circumstances. And I know the will has a lot to do with that. And is there a way to kind of increase your will so you can keep that image on your mind?
Well, there is. The will is what you concentrate with. The will is what enables you to hold one idea on the screen of your mind to the exclusion of outside distractions. And a person should, if you would make a commitment, you're going to practice strengthening your will maybe every day for a month. You have a favorite chair. Everybody seems to have a favorite chair in their home. Get a candle in a candle holder across from the chair and pick a time when you can be quiet, light the candle, and sit totally relaxed and stare at the flame. Now, every time you find your mind wander from the flame, don't feel bad that it wandered. Bring it right back, because at first it's not going to stay there more than a millisecond. And keep bringing it back. And keep staring at the flame until you literally become one with the flame. If you can concentrate on one thing, you can concentrate on anything. Now, when you say, you know, it's fairly easy to slip back into the old way, it's very difficult not to slip back into the old way, because the old way is our conditioned programmed way, and the conditioned programming is automatic. Try and change putting your underwear on different. Like, stop and ask yourself, what leg do you put in your underwear first? I put my right leg in. If I put my left leg in first, I'd probably fall over. That's how programmed we are.
Okay.
You know? When you're putting your jacket on, what arm do you put in the jacket first? I always put my right arm in first. If I tried to put my left arm in my jacket first, I might not get my jacket on very easy. And that is because we're programmed. Programming is nothing but a multitude of habits that are being expressed in behavioral patterns. Well, our behavior is to do what we're programmed to do. And what we're saying here is we're going to change the programming. Instead of letting our present results, our conditions, our circumstance that have been our condition and circumstance probably for years, instead of letting them control me, I am going to hold the image of what I want, and I'm going to change the direction that my life is going. And if it kills me, I'll walk around with a note in my hand, and I'll keep reading it. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is how I think. And we just hold the image of the person we want to be.
Okay.
Fantastic. One or two more questions real quick. Let's jump in. You got one.
Hey, Bob. Joe from Nebraska.
Yes, Joe.
Yeah, just recently got, you know, downsized out of a job, so I'm, you know, unemployed at the present moment. And one of the things that, you know, that I've been doing is looking for another job, you know, as I'm going down the road. But then all of a sudden I started getting thoughts about, you know, maybe going to work for myself. And all of a sudden, but this terror barrier, you know, that you talked about tonight suddenly comes up. And, you know, and now I'm out there, you know, thinking, well, you know, I need to have, you know, the security of a steady paycheck. And I need to have, you know, medical benefits for myself and my family and that type of stuff. And, you know, when I have thoughts about, you know, working for myself and maybe, you know, creating something larger than, you know, relying on corporate America, which has been very unreliable for me in the past, all of a sudden I start, you know, finding myself, you know, dismissing the thoughts about working for myself and suddenly, you know, starting to look for a job again.
The most natural thing in the world for you to do, Joe, is go and look for a job.
What's that?
I said the most natural thing in the world for you to do is go and look for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most practical, it's the most logical, and all your friends and your family are going to tell you that's what you should do. Do you know something, Joe? I wake up every morning and I thank God I don't have a job. I don't want to ever take a job.
Amen.
Because when I have a job, somebody else is telling me what time I get up, what time I eat, what time I take my vacation, how much I'm going to earn. They don't guarantee that I'm going to earn X number of dollars a year. They guarantee I'm not going to earn X number of dollars a year. And I only get the X that they guarantee me until they tell me they don't want me anymore.
Right, which they've done.
Well, where must you live?
I live in Nebraska.
What's your last name?
Sweeney, S-W-E-E-N-E-Y.
Okay, I'm going to get a hold of you.
Okay.
All right. But, Joe, you've got to build an image of what you want. Don't say, what do I think I can do? What do you want? How do you really want to live, Joe? That's what you want to start to do.
Right, and I don't want to rely on corporate America anymore because it's so unreliable.
Well, corporate America is a myth. It's a bunch of people in buildings, in brick-and-mortar edifices that operate with some kind of a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, it's Acme Chemical or something else chemical or something else. It's just a whole bunch of companies. That's corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, what do you want? How do you want to live? Who else got a question?
This is Steve in Palm Springs.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Bob. The last 3 years, I've worked very, very hard to change me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone from a person living on the edge, living a fast lifestyle, and I've been able to slowly change that through a lot of work that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
But I sell real estate. I do very well at it. And I still attract that same element, that same person to me. I have these people that are just driving me crazy. They're living on the edge. They're nuts. And what I end up doing is I end up putting their deals together, and there's always a payday at the end, but I go nuts in the meantime. I don't want to do that anymore. So I know I don't want to do it, but I'm still attracting them.
You know what to do? I'll tell you what to do. Take a maybe a 3x5 card and put a circle in the center of the card about the size of a silver dollar.
Okay.
Okay? And write in there, my clients. Okay? In the circle. Now, going out from the circle, straight lines like a starburst, all the way around the circle, all kinds of them.
Okay.
Now, you write on those lines the qualities you want your clientele to have. You want them to be decisive. You want them to be aware. And, you know, put all the qualities you want them to have. And carry this card with you. Now, there's going to be times when your mind tells you this is really nuts, but it's not nuts. And you mentally start doing business with these mythical individuals, okay?
Okay?
Now, what you're actually doing is you're building an image in your mind, And then you mentally see yourself, when it comes to transactions, they're decisive. So you see them making decisions. You see them that you're the kind of people you'd like to be friends with, so you may have lunch with them. And you're having a meaningful conversation with them. They like to talk about the things you like to talk about. And you go through a mental relationship with these people. And you see yourself putting a sign on their home, and you see yourself putting a sold sign. You see yourself shaking hands with them, congratulating them. You go through this, and you carry this card with you, and you see yourself attracting that kind of person, and quit saying you attract that other kind anymore.
Okay.
And you're going to find a transition will take place, because you're going to move into a different vibration, and you're going to attract a different clientele. But you've got to stay with that. You have to stay and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Carry it in your shirt pocket and keep reading it. Don't even tell anybody that you're doing that.
Got it. Okay.
Good.
Hi, yes. This is Jan Payne in Denver. I have attracted exactly what I wanted. I always wanted to do, be your assistant. And I couldn't be your assistant, but I've been invited to work with somebody that I admire very much. And this person has asked me to do all the things I always wanted to do for you. I've written a manual, and he wants me to do seminars and coach his coaches and all of that. And that's all coming to me the way I wanted it. But now what he's asked me for is for me to say how much I want to get paid, and I have no clue what to ask for.
What do you think you're worth?
A lot.
Okay.
But I don't know how to put it into, I don't know how to express it in dollars and cents. I don't know how to do that.
What's the most you've ever earned in a year?
$60,000.
Tell him you want $150,000 a year.
He wants to joint venture with me. He doesn't want to pay me.
Well, then joint venture, and you'll probably earn more than $150,000. Ask for 40%. He's going to find the business.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for 40% of everything you do. And then go ahead and do it. See, you've got to feel a servant is worth their hire. You've got to feel worthy of the good that you desire. If he's finding the business and you're going to do it, ask for 40% of it. You give it everything you've got for a while. You're going to find that it'll work out very well, and you'll probably end up doing it for yourself.
Hmm.
You're going to get a great education.
Yes, I already have, and I'm so grateful to you.
Good. Start to tell yourself you're worth it, and start to see yourself earning a minimum of $150,000. It's not very much money, you know.
It's all relative, right?
Pardon?
I said it's all relative,
yeah,
right?
It really is. Yeah, if you were earning $300, $150, you wouldn't be able to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Vic, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Bob.
All right.
Thank you, Bob.
Talk to y'all later, folks.
Thank you very much.